Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is, if you're ever down in Dallas, country singer Leanne Womack. I think her second album, early single from her. And I know your Memphis Grizzlies are indeed down in Dallas today.
How much time have you ever spent in Dallas?
I've been to Dallas a few times. When I was a kid, my dad took me there like for a little vacation thing. We saw a Rangers game and went to like Wet n' Wild and did some other stuff.
Right.
And then as an adult, I've been there a few times. I remember I was there for one trip once. I did the whole Dealey Plaza, Texas yeah. School Book Depository thing. I was there for the Cotton Bowl, actually, and it was actually at the Cotton Bowl where I sat one row in front of then Mayor Jim Strickland. I had pretty good seats. Saw Miranda Lambert play a pre-show party. That was fun. Maybe I've been there a couple other times.
And
not a lot of time, but a few times.
Have you eaten great Texas barbecue in Dallas?
I've eaten good Texas barbecue in Dallas. I've eaten great Texas barbecue in Austin.
In Austin?
Yeah.
And you don't particularly have a, you don't think Texas barbecue or Memphis, there's just different things, right? You're not.
I used to be a Memphian who scoffed at Texas barbecue until I started going to Texas. And that disabused you of that notion quickly. good Texas barbecue, the best Texas barbecue, like might be the best barbecue. The problem is it's super filling and heavy and super expensive. More so,
is it brisket? Is the best Texas barbecue brisket?
I mean,
is that what it is?
Classic Texas barbecue is brisket and sausage.
Yeah. Like
So day to day, give me some Memphis barbecue. But like special occasion barbecue every once, sort of like the Chicago pizza of barbecue. I Texas barbecue is pretty great.
I like the fact that you day to day could eat Memphis barbecue.
that's
quite a lot too. All right. Well, let's talk about the Mavs first. Interesting. They were without Luka for five games. They went 4-1 in those games, and now he is back. Pierce Clay's questionable tonight. Derek Lively's questionable tonight. Marshall is out tonight. But what do you make of these Mavs?
Well, that's helpful if those guys are out. I think the Mavs are really, really good. Obviously, they represented the West in the finals last year. They got off to a little bit of a slow start. I think a couple days ago on the show, we were talking about predicting the West standings. And I had the Mavericks second and the Grizzlies third going forward. I think if you forced me to predict like a finals today, I'd probably pick the Mavs, maybe over the Thunder to come out of the finals. I just think that team is really well composed. And it has an absolute superstar at the center of it, and Luka Doncic, who's also gotten off to a slow start this season. But I don't expect that to last either. The Mavericks have won 8 of their last 9 games, and the only loss in there was an overtime loss at Miami. And so they've been playing pretty good basketball, and now they have Luka back. I do think, they are not as deep as the Grizzlies 1 through 15. I think their main rotation, if fully healthy, is just perfectly assembled. And so if they're missing two or three of those guys, I think that is a help to the Grizzlies.
It's sort of interesting. They and they're questionable, not doubtful. So that's the problem.
We'll see.
Marshall's out. I think he's out with an illness. But it's interesting because 2 years ago they were in crisis. They were tanking. They were tanking for the draft pick that became Derek Lively, right? They were tanking.
Yeah, but that was sort of their version of a gap year, though. I mean, they weren't like blowing it up and rebuilding. That was like, let's tank and get the draft pick.
What went into that gap year? Was it more? But it was dysfunction too, wasn't it? It wasn't just injury, and that was the year that they traded for Kyrie.
They have completely rebuilt their roster around Luka over the course. I mean, Luka is still only like 24 or whatever, right? 24, 25, same draft as Jaren. But they haven't, like, grown it together the way the Grizzlies have grown it together. And the Grizzlies have had a lot of overhaul, too. But, like, they've in a very organic way, grown together Jaren Jackson, John Morant, Desmond Bane, three straight drafts. That's their core. And grown that together. That has not been the Mavs situation. Their core is Luka. Like, that's it. And so they have, like, 100% changed their team around him, like, over the course of a couple years. And they made some mistakes to not have a team that could grow with him, but they did a fantastic job of like reinventing the whole roster around Luka and putting together something that works.
When you did your recently, you were looking at which teams had lost the most games to injury among their core three. Who were your core three with Dallas? Who's the third?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, Luka, Kyrie, obviously. I went ahead and said Clay. I think Clay is their third guy in terms of, you know, scoring average. He's third in scoring average in terms of minutes. I mean, you could say Derek Lively, but he comes in off the bench.
Right.
You can really argue P.J. Washington. I think P.J. Washington's probably their third best player. But I think if they self-identify, like, our three most important guys, they might say Clay.
I have to say you're right. Like, their depth, they're around those three guys, whatever. If those are the three... Their next group is Lively, Dinwiddie, Marshall, P.J. Washington, Quentin Grimes, Danny Gatt. Like, they got a bunch of pros there.
They got two centers who can fly above the rim and finish Luka's lobs. They're Gafford and Lively. They're both shooting about over 70% from the floor because all they do is dunk. They got a shooter. Klay Thompson's not what he used to be, but he's still shooting like 37% or whatever on high volume. So they got a shooter in Klay. And then they got some, like, gritty, like, versatile, like, role guys. And P.J. Washington, I think, has been great for them. And Najee Marshall, I think, was a good signing. And so it's just, you sort of need Luka. I know they haven't needed Luka lately, but really you need Luka. But when you have Luka and Kyrie as sort of your engine, like, all you need is a lot of good role players who fit around them, and that's what they have.
Grizzlies are 14-7, Dallas 13-8. It isn't an NBA Cup game. That is... tonight. So, all right, your piece dropped on yesterday on Marcus Smart and Brandon Clark, and we talked about much of it yesterday, but a couple things I wanted to revisit from what you wrote. One is just when it comes from Brandon Clark, your conversation with Brandon, both with Jaren about Brandon Clark and then Brandon himself, he talked about figuring out the new offense. How much of the slow start was, quote-unquote, figuring out the new offense, do you think?
I mean, I think all the players say that. And so, like, I'm sure there's something there. And sort of, you know, it's hard to say. The one thing with Brandon that just watching the game I would point to is that he was shooting these corner threes. And I was even tweeting out, like, we've reached the end point of this. No more corner threes from Brandon Clark.
Right.
Like, this has to stop. It was like 1 of 16. And it wasn't. You'd have to be in the coaches meeting to really know what they want. But it's not like he has stopped. It's not like they've changed where he is in the flow of the offense. He's still sometimes just standing in the corner, and the ball sometimes finds him in the corner. I think what's changed, and I don't know how much of this is him and how much of this is tweaks, you know, internally, but in the last, you know, 4 or 5 games, when the ball finds himself there, he is, you know, he's passed it back out and going to set a screen to the guy he passed to. He's driving baseline and something comes out of that. He's doing other stuff instead of just taking the three that's there for him. And I think something has changed where he's gotten more comfortable or more aggressive or whatever it is to find better things in the offense than taking that three when the ball reaches his hands there. And I think that's been a thing that's helped him. I think, you know, I went back and watched, you know, his shots the first 4 or 5 games and the last 4 or 5 games. And one of the things I noticed, and I'm not enough of an X and O's guy, to see exactly how this is happening, but he is getting cleaner looks at his floater than he was early in the season. And maybe that is partly getting more comfortable in the offense. Like, he's getting into that floater without anyone touching him, basically, in a way that he wasn't early on. So I think there's probably something to that, getting comfortable and figure out how to move around in the offense and get the right touches and shots.
I also wonder if, you know, he talks about coming back from the injury. It's not so much the physical recovery from the injury, that's part of it, but it's also the adjustment of your game to your new physical limitations, right? Like, I don't know how much that plays into it, but I would think that would be some of it as well.
That is my belief, and he kind of said that, but it's a little vague. You know, guys don't like to say, like, I can't jump like I used to. No one's going to say that. And there are people watching the Grizzlies who think he's back. He's got the bounce back. I don't think that's true when I watch. I don't think he is getting up as high or as explosively at the rim as he did pre-injury. I think he's maybe gotten a little bit of that back, but I think it's more, my read is it's more getting comfortable in what your capabilities are, right? Like, I think we can all relate to that to some degree. Like, your physical capabilities change, and like, can you catch up with your instincts of what your body can and can't do anymore, right?
So the conceit of this was at least partly, again, Marcus Smart and Brandon Clark. One of them expected to start and one of them expected to come off the bench, and they found a success with the one who expected to start coming off the bench and the one who expected to come off the bench starting. One of the things that's interesting to me is that it's not just what they expected. It's also if you had asked them what they desired. Like, one of them really imagines himself a starter. He's coming off the bench. One really has always said openly, I prefer coming off the bench, and he's starting.
I didn't ask Brandon Clark about that. I thought about it, but I had so much else going on, and I didn't ask him about that, but he has said that publicly in the past, like, that he likes coming off the bench. I don't think he's, like, objecting to starting right now, but he is not someone who has pined for that in the way most players do. That is certainly true. And Marcus Smart, like, while saying the right things, like, if you listen close enough, like, he would rather be starting, I'm pretty sure. I think, to me, more the Marcus Smart thing, even more so than the Brandon Clark thing, because I do think there's an argument to start Edie and bring Brandon Clark off the bench. But I think the Marcus Smart thing really works off the bench for the reasons I sort of wrote about in the column, where when you have John Morant, Desmond Bain, Jared Jackson to start the game, there's only so many touches to go around. And it makes sense for the other two starters to be guys who play good defense and can impact the offense without having the ball very much. You know, a catch-and-shoot guy like Jalen Wells, a catch-and-finish guy like Brandon Clark. And I think Marcus Smart's instinct and ability to do more stuff with the ball is more useful coming off the bench.
It is interesting. I'm trying to come up with the I'm trying to find the quote, because you had the quote in here from Marcus Smart. But it's very clear he's not wild.
He sort of evokes being at Boston. He's just something like, you know, when you were at one team for a long time and you're starting and then you're in a new
team. Here it is. When you come from a place from a different team where you've been starting the majority of a career and then you go to the bench, you know, people definitely talk, trying to figure out why. And for me, I can't control what other people are thinking or saying. I can just control what I do and go out there and be professional, take what the defense gives me, and hone in on the opportunity that I have. But yeah, he's thinking of people out there talking about why he's been relegated to the bench, which, that, you know, it's not, he's not, you know, pitching a fit, but it very clearly bothers him. So going forward, I think your point is exactly right, that there's only so many touches when you have those three players at the heart of it, and in some ways he has much more both importance and flexibility coming off the bench. But what do you imagine does happen, and particularly with when Zach Edey comes back with Brandon Clark?
I just think the Clark Edey question is a separate question, because they are different stylistically, but they are similar in that, you know, they can help you on defense in different ways, and they don't need the ball a lot in different ways, so they can finish plays around the rim, you know. I think they can play similar kind of roles. So to me, that's just a question of sort of how the Grizzlies want to operate their team, you know, short term. I think long term, Zach Edey's the starting center on this team. But it's entirely possible that it's just going so well with Brandon Clarke, you just stick with that for now, and like Zach Edey reemerges next season as your starting center. I do think his future on this team is starting center, and I think that's a relatively near future. But maybe it's not right now. Maybe you like the Clarke thing. The other thing to me is I just think about playoff basketball. And, like, Zach Edey and Jalen Wells are rookies. And Marcus Smart, you brought to Memphis more for playoff basketball than regular season basketball, frankly. And Brandon Clarke, like, you've already turned to him in the past. When you had Steven Adams, you were turning to him in playoff basketball. And so I think, if anything, the roles of those guys grow in playoff basketball. But I'll be interested to see, like, the Jalen Wells fit is working great right now, but is he going to be, like, in the starting lineup for game one of the playoffs? I wonder about that.
I wonder about it, but I also really did wonder when he was put in the starting lineup in the regular season, and all of a sudden he's hitting threes. Like, he seems pretty much unfazed by the situations you put him in.
He just keeps doing it. And yeah. So, like, at some point, you just sort of should believe in it. He plays with a lot of composure. He's a lot of patience in his game, which that's one of the things that's impressed me most. I do wonder, like, he's been way better than expected on defense to this point. I mean, tonight would be a good yes, test of this. Like, is he guarding Luka? Is he guarding Kyrie? Like, what are they doing with him defensively? This whole, we guard the other team's best guy is one thing where you talk about C.J. McCollum and DeJounte Murray. Now we're talking about, you know, Luka and Kyrie.
In other news, Cam Spencer went off last night for the Hustle. 51 points, Cam Spencer. He had, what was he from the line? He was 12 of 15 from three, 18 of 24 overall. Putting up numbers in the G League does not mean you're going to, you know, ascend directly to the main roster. And you, for physical reasons, you're somewhat skeptical. The other problem is it's damn crowded now.
It's hard to see him. You're trying to wonder, like, how you're going to get Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson on the floor. Right. So whatever with Cam Spencer. But the thing about him is, like, you know, yeah, G League doesn't guarantee anything, but it's a box that he's maybe already checked. I mean, that's a pretty persuasive game, right?
Yep.
And so with him, it's like he doesn't seem like he should be that good because of his size as you move up, but, like, he keeps moving up and keeps being good. And so he was good at literally the highest level of college basketball. He was good at NBA Summer League. He's now good in the G League. He didn't get a chance to play really in preseason, so we didn't see that. I do think NBA basketball is obviously the highest, hardest level, but I think not only that, it's not just the next rung on the ladder. It's like seven rungs up from whatever the next rung is. And so the reality is he's a really good basketball player. There are lots of really good basketball players who aren't good in the NBA. And so they're just, if you look around the league, there just aren't many guys with his combination of size athleticism who make it in the NBA. There just aren't. That does not mean he won't be an exception to that. He may be. We haven't seen enough. I'm not declaring it either way, but that is the reality. You look around the league, like who looks and moves like Cam Spencer? Like Sam Merrill, who's like, you know, the eighth man in Cleveland? Like,
right.
It's just not many guys.
Let's see. Elsewhere, you do have, and you when this happened early, you've always been skeptical of these Lakers, and now Golden State has lost four straight. Denver's only two games over 500, and the Lakers lose last night, scoring only 80 points. LeBron 4 of 16. He is 0 of 19 from three over his last four games. He is. And by the way, what sort of stock do you put in this number? He was minus 28 in 31 minutes last night, and on the season at minus 111, he has the worst plus-minus on the team.
I think even if you might be the greatest basketball player who's ever lived, which LeBron James might be, when you're like 39 years old or whatever, it's hard to give your defensive all in game 20 of an 82-game NBA regular season. So, I think if this were the playoffs, you would see a different story. But, like, they got to win games to get there. And I do wonder about his both willingness and ability to still turn it up, like, you know, every single night through a regular season. He's still playing every game, which is one thing.
The topic was his insistence on playing every game and whether that makes sense given his age, right?
Like, well, their team stinks other than the top four or five guys.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, that's part of the problem. You know, he could sit down, but, like, who's playing? You know, like, Cam Reddish is going to play 30 minutes? I'm very comfortable in my skepticism of the Lakers. I sort of feel like I should have been retained more skepticism about the Warriors. Because I had the Warriors, like, I don't know, eighth or right. something like that in my preseason thing. And I probably came around to them too quickly with their hot start. That team is still a team where the second best player is probably Draymond Green, who, like, also, like, can't score and is, like, 37 or whatever he is, you know? I don't know about that. Like, maybe, you know, Houston and Denver and some of those teams are going to be better. I know Denver's a little shaky, too. But the Warriors, I don't know. Warriors may really be coming down to earth.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Rudy's piece over there. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman. Before then, I will tell you, you can tackle the NFL action on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers can get $150 in bonus bets if you win. FanDuel Sportsbook app gives you everything you need to place live bets on the NFL all in one place. So, get a hunch in the middle of the game, check out the latest stats, view live play-by-play, and so much more on the same page where you place your bets. Just visit FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to join today. You can get started with $150 in bonus bets if you win your first $5 bet. Again, it's FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Back in a moment with Charles Fishman. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN. As
a kite by then. If you're getting engaged this holiday season, well, first, congratulations. And second, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, the way Jeffrey did, the way Connor did. It's a spectacular time of the year to get engaged, and Robert Irwin Jewelers is the place to go. It's a tradition of trust for more than 46 years. That's how long Robert Irwin Jewelers has been operating right here in Memphis, making people happy, celebrating occasions with couples. And at Robert Irwin Jewelers, in addition to everything else, you have the meant-to-be guarantee, which means if you buy your diamond engagement ring from Robert Irwin Jewelers, 365-day no questions asked return policy. That's the kind of reassurance you get that you're at the right place. She's going to love it, but still, peace of mind. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers. Free ring sizing for life. Free jewelry spa service for life. Sparkle now and pay later. 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. Joined now by Charles Fishman. He's our man in Washington, D.C., author of I Lose Count. 3, 5, a whole bunch of New York Times bestsellers. Most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. I happened to be at I think it was called Winter Arts. It was a place where local artists go to sell their wares. And, you know, that's coffee cups and pottery and paintings and whatever. It's out Saddle Creek. And I was there, and I was talking to my son Peter on the phone and hung up. And then a lovely woman walked up to me and said, "Do you like that pottery?" And I said, "I do like that pottery." And she said, "I just wanted to hear your voice. Are you Jeff Calkins?" And then she proceeded to not tell me how much she likes the show. But she really said, "Charles, I really like that guy Fishman. I really like that guy Fishman." And so out of the blue, recognizing my voice, she wanted to pass along her compliments.
And I appreciated that.
Yes.
And then what happened?
Then we called you. Then we called you and put you on speakerphone. And,
I'm a little worried about you talking about this, because the number of calls from Memphis may just overwhelm the productivity here as you meet people in public. Can I talk to Charles?
She did. That's true. She did say that's true. If you see me out and about and you want to talk to Charles Fishman, I'll put you in touch immediately. She did say she worried.
Wait a minute. Assuming you're not actually on the phone with me
at the ready, that's a good point. Anyway, she was a little concerned that if we called to pass along the compliments, that it would go to your head. And so I said
what'd you tell her?
I said that ship has sailed. That ship has long since sailed. So anyway, you got fans here, Charles. I appreciate it.
That was a fun call. I'm sorry. It was the day after Thanksgiving, right?
It was the day after Thanksgiving. I had been shopping at, oh my, Lululemon is so ridiculously expensive, but I was getting, Andrew likes this bomber jacket that they have there. And Andrew is 5'10", roughly 112 pounds. Like he's in my middle kid. And so he fits beautifully into the slimming stuff at Lululemon. And so that's what I did. I bought him a jacket there. And then I slipped in to this place where they had pottery and whatnot. And it was nice to meet more of your fans, Charles. Okay, I don't want to tarry any longer.
But telling stories. Let's be honest, telling stories about Andrew during my segment.
That's you're right.
I like Andrew.
Really was
but
about
I,
you. The story was really more about you than about Andrew.
Right up until we went to Lululemon. Do you want to go straight from your own shopping to Black Friday and Cyber Monday, or you want to start with travel?
Sure,
Where do you want to go?
No, let's go Black Friday. You have shopping news? Let's do the shopping news.
In this segment, unlike your show and the rest of radio, we believe in accountability.
Yes.
How did the predictions work out?
Right.
Amazon just announced 19 minutes ago that the Black Friday through Cyber Monday period for Amazon was an all-time record. I assume
it's going to be for Amazon every year.
For
right?
Amazon, yeah. Right. That doesn't really surprise me.
No.
The expected sales were $13.2 billion on Black Friday. I'm talking about Cyber Monday. Let's talk about Black Friday for a minute. Overall, Black Friday sales.
Not Amazon. You're talking generally.
This is the whole economy.
Okay, yeah.
MasterCard measures this.
Okay.
And they infer from their own percent
Swipes.
Of the economy and their own spending, they give you numbers for the whole economy.
Yeah.
So just Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, up 3.4% this year compared to last year. And last year was up 2.5%. So there's a lot of chatter about how people can't apparently afford a dozen eggs, but they can afford a big new big screen TV. 3.4% is retail sales growing faster than GDP. Americans found the money to shop on Black Friday.
That's above GDP. The GDP is its own rise. Is that right? Or is it just...
Well, the GDP in the U.S. this year is growing in the 2.8%. The whole economy is growing by about 2.8% this year.
I see.
But sales on Black Friday grew by 3.4%. Now, who knows what's going to happen by the end of the shopping season? And retail is just one part of the economy. But it's a sign that the American consumer is not quite out of money yet, right?
Right.
Online sales grew 14.6%. So So here's the comparison. Yesterday was called Cyber Monday. Cyber Monday was literally invented in 2005 by the National Retail Federation. Hey, what about our online retailers? They need a day like
right.
Black Friday. So it's
we
it's
said
really,
yesterday.
Literally,
it feels like every day is Cyber Monday now, though.
It feels like every day is Cyber Monday. Amazon Prime days, Target Circle days. Yesterday's sales, we already have the data, $13.3 billion on Cyber Monday, up 7% from last year.
Holy smokes. Now, that's some of it is people
Friday,
moved.
Hang on, yep. Hang on. Friday's online sales were $11 billion. So, in fact, Americans just shop online. That's what I'm saying. Do.
In that way, that's why I said every day feels like Cyber Monday. We shop all the time. In fact, here's the truth. You have recently bought a couch online, a bed online. Like, there are things that once upon a time we wouldn't have bought online, right? You're like, okay, right. I'll buy, right. And, or you wouldn't buy your toilet paper online, or you wouldn't buy your, and
right.
Now,
I mean, it's amazing.
There is
right.
Nothing that people don't, but they buy cars online.
Right. My wife has taken a job at the Miami Herald, and she has a little apartment down there, and she's going to be down there.
I think
we'll be able to determine my competitive value compared to warm weather. It's going to be an interesting trade-off. She's going to be down
there. More interested in you or warm weather?
A week or two a month, except in January and February when I don't provide enough warmth. It was 24 degrees here this morning, and right. She woke up to 72. But we bought a couch online. Now, I'll be honest, that makes me very nervous because the experience
you
got to
sit on a couch. You got to sit on a couch.
The experience of a couch is exactly. But it had 67 reviews. It had 4.8 stars.
You would also think, though, that you need to lie on a bed, and people now buy mattresses all the time online.
The same day we bought a mattress online. We just picked the top-ranked mattress from Wirecutter. We don't have time at this moment to go visit six mattress stores, hear the pitch, roll your eyes, be told that we're buying the wrong bed for, So now, just to be clear, most spending is not done online. 84% of our retail spending, 84% is done in stores. 16% of total retail online. But think for a minute just about groceries, right? Now, lots of people do their grocery shopping online too. We do all our grocery shopping in person. So there are things people do in person, but it is amazing. Wayfair, my poor mom, 90 years old, who is here for Thanksgiving, my beloved mom, she literally does not have an email address. She does read the New York Times and the Miami Herald on the phone, but grudgingly. She asked where we bought the couch, and then she said, I've never seen a Wayfair store. How do I go visit one? Right. And she was utterly baffled when I said, Mom, I hate to break the news to you,
but
there are no.
Where do you pick up a copy of the Daily Memphian? Also, interesting question.
Right, there are no stores. So, and here's a couple more things. So, despite the grumbling about the economy, the retail economy is doing very well as the Biden administration ends and the Trump administration begins to take hold. Simon Properties owns and operates 100 malls across the U.S. Mall traffic on Friday up 5.9% compared to last year. Saturday, 6.3%. Sunday, mall traffic up 8.2%. compared to the same Sunday last year. So I think that's interesting just because, I'll be honest, I certainly haven't been in a shopping mall of any kind in a year.
Yeah. You have something written down, Brown Friday.
We got to talk about the TSA travel record before.
Okay, I just didn't know that. I didn't know if it was more shopping. Okay.
No, it's not about shopping.
I see. Okay, onward to TSA. So we are buying things. Are we also traveling?
Amazing. Huge traveling. Same thing. The economy is not, in fact, groaning under disastrous.
Okay, you have to stop telling people
numbers.
That, Charles. Go ahead. Just give us the facts, ma'am. Yes.
Sunday, this Sunday. I mean, let's pause and appreciate this. This Sunday was the busiest single travel day at American airports in American history ever, including before the pandemic. 3,087,000 travelers screened on Sunday. I went to the airport twice on Sunday. Both our daughter and my wife flew out on Sunday, and everything worked, right? You want to know the total number of flights canceled on Sunday? Remember the disastrous Christmas with Southwest 2 years
one
ago?
One and a half ago. Yeah, a year, 2 years ago. Yeah, remember, I drove home from Newark.
From Newark, right. Yeah. There were hundreds of flights an hour canceled. There are 45,000 flights a day in the United States, which is itself incredible, right? 2,000 flights an hour taking off 24 hours a day, and they don't fly 24 hours a day. Guess how many flights were canceled on Sunday of the 45,000 nationwide?
642.
87 wow. flights canceled nationwide. That's actually kind of less than a typical day. The airlines did a great job. The airports did a great job. We complain when it doesn't work well.
Well, and the weather wasn't great either, right? The weather wasn't great everywhere.
Detroit had the highest number of delays because of the weather, that whole band of snow. But everything worked. The digital systems worked. Air traffic control worked. In fact, just randomly, my wife left at 10 in the morning. My daughter left at 5 in the afternoon. Both flights took off on time. Both flights arrived early. So it was the busiest travel day, and it worked. Here's the other thing. The week, it's not a week. TSA reports that between Tuesday and Sunday, 15.25 million travelers passed through airports. 15.25 million. Last year, same period, 13 million. So literally more than about 15% more people flew this Thanksgiving than last Thanksgiving. So there you go. People are feeling comfortable spending money on their plane tickets, and the system worked well. There you go. So happy. I'm happy about all that. Brown Friday.
Okay, you want to get to Brown Friday? You want to tell me about Australia?
We're gonna make short work of Brown Friday.
Okay, what is Brown Friday? Never heard of it.
Yeah, we're gonna make it a thing, man. Turns out Friday is the busiest day of the year. The Friday after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, is the busiest day of the year for American plumbers.
Oh, for pooping.
Because people clog their kitchen
That's
sinks.
Great.
The brown
It's not clogging their toilets, which could also happen the day after Thanksgiving.
Grease, mashed potatoes, potato peels going down the sink, not being adequately run through the disposal. And frankly, you shouldn't put the grease. You should just, you should pour that into a takeout container and throw it in the garbage, right? So it is literally the busiest day of the year
for plumbers.
And here's data. I think is this from last year? Last year's data showed that the worst cities for clogs, God, this is going to make you guys happy. Number one, L.A. Number two, Miami.
Really?
Number three, Nashville, Tennessee.
What's your theory on those highfalutin places? Jeffrey got a theory for L.A.,
yes,
Miami,
I do.
And Nashville.
Miami throws me off, but I'll say that this is more New Age Miami. Those are places that people don't cook very much. It's all those are.
He's a great point. Right.
So they know what the hell they're doing.
Correct.
They don't know.
All these nouveau people are always eating out and going for dinner. Right. Let's get lunch. You want to get brunch? You want to get brunch?
Huge brunch spots. Let's get brunch for days.
You yourself were going to call a plumber. We had a great Thanksgiving.
Not only was I going to call a plumber, I did call a plumber. But Claire, in the end, fixed the damn thing herself. We had an emergency. The shower would not turn off unless we turned off the water to the entire house. And so we did. But that's not good at Thanksgiving time, to turn off the water to the entire house.
I don't even know how you survived that, to be honest.
It would literally turn on the water when you needed it. It was awful. But Claire, in her incredible resourcefulness, she was able to fix it, although some plumbers were willing to help. I appreciated that. All right, moving right along. Australia. I read the headline, but that's it. Australia has banned social media for under 16-year-olds? Is that what it is? And how the hell does this work?
Yes. A huge leap for the nation of Australia, which has about 28 million people. I'm sorry, 27 million people. On the last day of their legislative session, last Thursday, they passed a ban. It's very interesting on any Australians under 16 having a registered online social media account, because they're experiencing the same things that we and lots of other nations are experiencing, which is kids go online, they get depressed, they get obsessed, they worry about their weight, they don't interact socially with their peers.
It's bad for them.
There are
it's bad for
problems
them.
With
yes.
suicide. It's
yes.
simply bad for them. And so this social media ban, it, you know, essentially aimed at Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, it's interesting. It doesn't ban people under 16 from using social media. It bans them from having a registered account. Some social media you can use without an account or see some content. Some you can't. But it's easier to enforce an account ban than a use ban, right? How do I know if
right.
someone's viewing content that I don't have to register for? And the fines are huge. Companies that do not honor the ban and work to enforce it can be fined $30 million. So this is serious. Of course, they opposed it. The support in Australia was 77% in favor of the ban.
Wow.
Now, the question is, how do you do it?
Well, yes. So can't, you know, if young Andrew, to bring him back into the conversation, if he had, at age 14, had wanted to go on TikTok, he could just use my TikTok account, right?
Well, he could. That would be you being in the 23% of people who didn't care. If you cared
right, right,
about
yeah, right,
your
right,
son,
right, yes.
you wouldn't.
No,
let him
I wouldn't.
Your,
I wouldn't. Right. I would not let
that,
him.
That's a different kind of issue. The way you enforce this is when someone sets up an account, you have to provide age verification. Typical age verification would be a driver's license or a passport or a school ID or a government ID of some kind that shows your age. In fact, the Australia law does not take effect until 1 year from January 1st. So they have a year to experiment. They're going to literally experiment with varieties of age verification. Oddly, the law specifies that there have to be age verification methods that don't require a government ID. Which is interesting. I guess maybe there are 17 and 18 year olds in Australia who wouldn't have a government ID or don't want to provide it, or 16 year olds for that matter. Anyway, in the U.S., a bunch of states have put in place some rules. Florida has an under 14 ban.
Really?
That is being challenged in court. It has not taken effect yet. And Florida, I believe, requires, I mean, all of these rules.
It's funny. Like, we don't let kids buy cigarettes. Like, we
don't let kids buy alcohol.
We don't let kids buy alcohol.
We don't let kids join the military. There are
right.
lots. We don't let kids
drive a car. Drive a car. Yeah.
Right. You do.
Exactly.
You have
right.
to certainly have to provide age verification to register to vote, to drive a car. There's nothing wrong with this. I think. I mean, there's an online component, right? So how do you expect Facebook to verify your age? And Facebook's like, we can't be made to do that. That's too much.
Right.
Well, if you don't put the responsibility,
yeah, you know
on
what?
The company,
buyers have to ID people. You know why? In the same way,
right.
It's probably
if
a pain in the ass.
If you don't put the responsibility
right?
on the company, it will never happen. The company. One theory of how to do this, which is an interesting theory, is that the companies should get together and create a standard, and then they should ask Apple and Google to enforce the standard at the moment people get a phone and log on, that your phone would have proof of your age built in, the way lots of people use their phone with their credit, you know, to pay for things. And that's an interesting idea. Apple actually has been on record saying, yeah, we don't want to be the people doing that. Thank you.
Of course,
thank you
of course
very
they
much.
Don't. Do you have, do you want to tell me about your Thanksgiving? Or do you want to tell me about the greeting cards?
I don't want to tell you about my Thanksgiving. I want to tell you about we moved on from Thanksgiving. Man.
Okay, go ahead. Greeting cards. We got
to
wrap up in a minute. In a minute. So go ahead.
Christmas is the number one occasion for U.S. greeting cards. The U.S. greeting card industry is crazy. This is from a podcast called The Economics of Everyday Things.
Yep.
We buy 6.5 billion greeting cards a year. That's 20 cards per person. So if you're not getting 20 cards, right, then your friends and relatives are neglecting you. 20 cards per person per year. 1.5 billion of those cards, 23% of them are Christmas cards. So Christmas is the big holiday. Guess what holiday is number two for greeting cards?
Valentine's Day.
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Even over Mother's Valentine's Day. 90% of U.S. households buy cards each year.
It's sort of funny, though. Christmas cards are different than Valentine's and Mother's Day cards. Those you get, Valentine's Day cards you can get for the whole class, you know, 28 of them, you know, to give your second grade
or
class.
Or you buy
whatever.
One at a time.
But Christmas cards, you send out a raft. People who do Christmas cards send out a raft of Christmas cards. Right. You don't send out a raft of Mother's Day cards, you know, so it's not a fair fight, right?
No.
You send out one Mother's Day card.
In fact, in that way, Mother's Day looks
pretty damn well.
I'm just talking about the economics.
Yeah.
80% of cards are bought by women, which is interesting because in my family, the only greeting cards my wife ever buys are
for your birthday.
The cards for my birthday and my anniversary. Otherwise, I buy them all. 80% bought by women, and 80% of the cards are sold by Hallmark and American Greetings. Wow.
What do you expect to pay for just a, you know, you walk in there, you look at the thing. What do you expect to pay for a card now?
A typical ordinary card that just opens one fold with no embossing.
No play music or anything.
$4.95. And the card, we now go to the cool bookstore nearby, Politics and Prose. They have incredibly funny greeting cards,
right.
No Hallmark, no American Greetings. Those cards are $8.95. You just wince. 60% of greeting cards are delivered by mail.
All right, we got to get out of here. We're done.
And millennials,
the time is up.
Are crazy.
Play the music. Get them out of here.
Send Christmas cards this year.
Make your first NBA. Thanks, Charles. On Twitter at C Fishman. Make your first NBA bet a swish with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. FanDuel is all your favorite bets: who will win the game, how many points a player will score, plus. Check out newer bets, like the number of dunks, assists, or three-pointer in the next 3 minutes. Doesn't matter if you tap into FanDuel before the game starts or after it is already tipped off. You can pick up a W whenever. Now's the perfect time to get on the action, because right now, new customers bet $5, win $150, get $150 in bonus bets if that first bet wins. That's right. It's FanDuel. Pop on over. Promo code is Calkins. FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. It must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. What's next?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson and Jason Fitz join them today. Tim Murray will be with me to, of course, discuss all things college football this week, as it is a big one. We got championship week. We'll have more rankings tonight. That'll be on Jeff Wright and Company. Also, Jeff will be with the guys on Gabe's show today.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for an hour work stuff.